You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. I hope you all enjoyed your Memorial Day weekend. I was just talking to our sound engineer, who's back, and he said he was rained out, unfortunately. He had a tent near a river that's now underwater. I hope you didn't get caught by the rain. I stayed home and did a lot of reading, and I hoped you at least gave a few minutes of prayer or at least thoughts for the soldiers, the men and women, the professional soldiers of our armed forces that paid the ultimate sacrifice, namely they died in combat. Now, I was in the middle of going over material that I prepared before the Memorial Day weekend, and I actually added some after the weekend. And what it's about is this, and this is something that neither political party, neither the Democrats or the Republicans really want to talk about or focus in on, even though it really does impact them rather critically. And that's the fact that over the years, more and more people are leaving both political parties, both the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party. Now, what many talk show hosts will point out, and I agree with this, it's just a matter of math, more and more people running for offices, whether it's at the local, city, state, county, as well as for the House or the Senate, who's winning? Well, you only have really two choices, and that's the problem. The Republicans are winning big time, both in 2010 and even more so in 2014, and I think in 2016, I think that trend will continue, although there's some debate on that. I think at worst, the Republican Party will hold their gains in the House and the Senate. But more and more people are simply dissatisfied with both parties. They're leaving for different reasons, that's clear, but they really feel that both political parties are not really addressing their chief concerns, and there's several. And because of that, they feel they've been lied to, misled, and they've given up on both parties. And that's certainly my case. If you listen to the show, you know that my political philosophy is one of classical liberalism. And I underline classical liberalism. And for those that aren't familiar with that, in the United States, usually you don't hear that term, but we're referred to as libertarians. And I certainly will admit that I'm a libertarian, although I prefer by far the term classical liberalism. And there are some fine differences between the two, but it's not worth getting into. The key thing is libertarians, classical liberals, are very much for limited government. And that addresses, in the sense that if we could get back to limited government, the major problem today that we have in the United States, and it's impacting the country, and that is out-of-control government spending. Year after year, without fail, it doesn't matter whether the Democrats or the Republicans have the presidency and who controls the House or the Senate, under both George W. Bush as well as President Obama, we've run massive deficits. And they're going to come back in even larger amounts. Right now, we're running a deficit for this fiscal year that ends in September of somewhere between $500 and $600 billion. Now, what you need to understand, even the very last year of George Bush's presidency, we never got above $500 billion, which it was a record. If my memory serves, his last year, the deficit was $459 billion, and the Democrats and the media were jumping up and down. But what they didn't tell you is who controlled Congress then. The Democrats. Money bills have to be passed by the House. And yes, the Senate has to go along with it, and they have to get a bill that has common language. But the Democratic Party won big in 2006 and controlled Congress starting in 2007. So really, the big spending has been under both presidents. The difference really today is the sheer magnitudes. It's the numbers. Because prior to President Obama coming to office, there was never a $1 trillion deficit, where $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. And $1 billion is $1,000 million. Now, I've said it on the part one, those numbers are simply hard to comprehend. That's a lot of money, folks. But it's a lot of money that the United States, or its people would be a better way to say it, don't have. The United States government, through our elected representatives, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, are consistently spending more money than the American people can afford. We're living way beyond our means. And this will not continue, because ultimately there will be a default. And the way they'll do it, though, is not a, they won't say we won't pay interest or our principal. What they'll do is depreciate the purchasing power or the value of your money, and you'll see it in higher and higher prices. That's how the government will solve the problem. You see, what's going on, it's really two steps to this. The government can't pay its bills, so it's borrowing money, a lot of money. And that's called a deficit, where your spending, your outlays, government spending outlays, the Democrats like to call it investment. Don't be fooled by that. It's spending. Where your outlays exceed your total tax collections, and we've consistently done it, that's called a budgetary deficit. So how do you pay your bills? The government, like everyone else, has to pay the bills. It has to pay its people. We have massive bureaucracies, and we spend a lot of money. It borrows it. And because the United States government can tax its people, people will lend the government money, but at a price. And the price is the interest rate. And the problem is, you have the Federal Reserve, which is the central bank of the United States, pursuing what's called a near zero interest rate policy. You might hear it referred to as ZERP. In other words, the interest rates today are not really market interest rates. Because if they were market interest rates, the whole term structure of interest rates, whether we're talking treasury bills, treasury notes, or bonds, would be across the board much higher. Probably somewhere, you get estimates and debates on this, between 2 to 4% more. So if you're an investor, and in the past you invested in government securities, namely treasury securities of the United States, you say to yourself, well, there's a risk. And I'm not getting paid what I think I should for carrying that risk. So what do? You don't invest. That's a problem for the United States. You want people to invest. And now, because some of this debt, a significant portion, is held by foreign countries, as well as their central banks, more and more countries are coming to the same conclusion as professional investors. So what happens? The Federal Reserve, our central bank, becomes a buyer of those treasury securities. Now, it has stopped doing that. But for many, many years, it did it. And just to put in context, and I said this yesterday, prior to the financial crisis of 2008, the debt of the Federal Reserve was approximately $800 billion in round numbers. Today, it's over $4 trillion, over five times that. And that's because what the Fed was doing over those years was buying treasury securities, a lot of treasury securities. They also bought what's called agency securities, mortgage-backed securities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which was taken over by the government. So the big enabler here has been the Federal Reserve, because it becomes a buyer of these treasury securities. Now, it's stopped that, and Congress lets them get away with it. Why? Congress knows, whether it's a Democratic-run House or Senate or a Republican, the government has to pay its bills. So they go along with this. They don't really stop it. And I want to be fair to the Federal Reserve or central bank. The problem is Congress. The problem is out of control spending. And neither party is capable of balancing a budget. They'll talk and talk and talk and try to fool you, misdirect you. But the bottom line is incapable of balancing a budget. It's always 10 years from now we'll balance the budget. Have you noticed that? Vote for me and I'll balance the budget. Don't seem to get any closer, and here's the problem, and it's a big problem. Starting around 2017, which is 2 years from now, not that far away, the deficit is going to go back to the levels that we saw in the early years of the Obama administration, where it was over $1 trillion, which is $1,000 billion. Why? And here is the fundamental problem that needs to be addressed and is not being addressed. Every day, more and more baby boomers, and I'm a baby boomer, I happen to be, I think, on the leading edge of the baby boom generation. In other words, I'm the oldest, but I'm in that baby boom generation. And for those that are not familiar with it, those were babies that were born largely when veterans from World War II came home, and they might have been married or got married and then started to have kids. So people that were born between 1946 and 1964 are the baby boom generation, and there are about 75 million still alive. Now, I haven't had time to check that number. It probably be less, but here's the problem. Once the baby boom generation reached retirement age, and most people, I shouldn't say most people, a lot of people will wait till they get full benefits from Social Security, and usually that's at either at age 65 or 66. It depends on what year you were born, because the age you can get full benefits, they made some reforms and increased the retirement age. Originally, it was age 65. When Social Security was passed in 1935, they made the retirement age where you could get full benefits 65. Now, why did they make it 65? Because people weren't living to 65. The government says, well, we'll offer them this benefit, and when they reach 65, most of them will be dead. We'll have to pay off some of them that reach it. But what didn't they really factor into that program? We've had advances in medicine and technology. As a result, most people today are living into their 70s and 80s or longer. If you really take care of yourself, exercise, have a proper diet and rest, and seek medical help if you have a problem, you very much will live into your 80s, whether you're a man or a woman. Now, obviously, if you have health problems, you're overweight, and that leads to high blood pressure or diabetes or heart problems, you might not make it to 80. But most Americans today, whether they're male or female, are living way beyond age 65 or 66. Most of them go into their 70s. Yeah, you're always going to hear in the news someone died at 66, 67, but they still got some benefits. Now, the people that really lost out, if you die prior to starting to collect the benefits, and there's certain requirements, you got to, for example, work at least 10 years or 20 quarters, and I'll get into this in a minute. Social Security is very much a pay-as-you-go system. So people over their working lives, and that's usually 30, 40, 50 years, depends how much you work, are paying Social Security taxes, so-called payroll taxes, both for Social Security, disability, as well as Medicare. So it's pay as you go. Now, is that money put in an account for you? No, it's not. The money that I paid in the Social Security and Medicare for both retirement, disability, and Medicare, all that money has already been spent. It went to the people that were older than me. In other words, think of it, your parents or your grandparents. Social Security was set up as a pay-as-you-go system. Now, what has been the problem? Yes, we had a baby boom generation. For example, my parents, who are deceased, had two kids, me and my brother. Some families were much bigger, 3, 4, 5. But today, what has happened since World War II? Parents are choosing not to have more than two kids. Now, there's always going to be exceptions to the rule, but the point is Social Security is pay as you go. There's no money in any account or trust fund that you've put in. And the people, for example, that are paying my benefits today are those that are working. So the number of workers to retirees has gone down, down, and down because people are having less kids. And to replace your population, what's the so-called replacement ratio is 2.1 children. So you need at least 2.1 children to have your population constant. Obviously, if you have more than that, your population will grow. If you have less than that, your population will decline. And what you need to know, most of the European countries, including Russia, their populations are declining because their birth, their replacement or birth rate replacement rate is below 2. It's 1.9, 1.8, 1.5, 1.3, depending on the country. That's Europe. Now, what does that lead to? And this has gradually happened to the United States, but we're probably in the best shape compared to Europe and some Europe and Japan, for example. As people have less kids, the population gets older, the percentage of those over 65 grows, and you have less workers paying in or paying the benefits of the older population. So invariably what happens is the government does... It has several things it can do. It can change the retirement age, and that's what they're going to do, from 66, 67 today to maybe 70 or even higher. That's one quick fix, but it's not a long-range fix, because if people continue to have fewer kids, you have a demographic problem, a challenge. And they're seeing that today in Russia, Japan, Italy, and some of the other European countries, because people are not having kids. And the population gets, the percentage of the population 65 or older gets older and older. Now, I want to get back, I wanted to give you that context. So the problem facing the United States today is our population is growing older, and we have fewer workers, the ratio of workers to retirees is getting smaller and smaller. In other words, there are fewer workers per retiree. So in the long run, that's a problem. You see, the assumptions made by those who, and they were liberals, this is during the presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt, really hadn't thought this out. The system was pay as you go. In other words, the money wasn't put in an account for an individual. That would have been a much better way to do it. It's not my preferred way, but that would have been at least better. But because it's pay as you go, the money that, for example, I paid in has been spent. It's gone. And I rely on people working in the United States today to pay my Social Security benefits as well as my Medicare benefits. And the problem is Medicare has been running a huge deficit for years, and now Social Security is doing the same thing, and it's going to get worse because more and more baby, I'm on the leading edge of the baby boom generation. There are still people in the baby boom generation that are working because they're much younger than me, but they too will be retiring. When is this really going to hit big time? Really starting around 2025, 2030, you'll get different numbers, about 10 to 15 years from now. We don't have much time to correct the situation. And there are things that can be done. But what fundamentally must be done? We have to downsize the federal government. Do you hear really any politicians, Democrat or Republicans, seriously talking about this? The answer is no. Now, yes, New Jersey Governor Christie made statements that he thinks Social Security should be mean tested. Well, if you make that kind of statement, I'll tell you the reaction, especially of the people that are on Social Security. They're going to say, excuse me, sir, I paid into this. I didn't have a choice. You forced me to do this, and I want every cent I'm owed, period. Don't give me this mean tested nonsense. See, what he's saying is, assume you did the right thing. You saved your money. And now, besides, Social Security is a base, and that's the way to think of it. But you invested your money, and you accumulated some money. Maybe a lot of money. I don't know. Do you think it's right that Social Security should be means tested? And the answer, as far as I'm concerned, is no. Why? People, I would have been much better off, for example, if I took the money that I was required to pay every paycheck and invested it myself. Now, some of you say, well, some people just can't do that. Well, there's people, and I was one of them, that can advise you. But my point is this, and I'm looking at the time, and I don't want to get diverted into another topic. But here's the point. America, the United States, is living beyond its means. That cannot be argued. It's a fact. And the only way we can correct the situation, and the first step is just get to a balanced budget where the money we spend equals the money we collect. Now, the Democrats would like to spend more money, And they think the answer to this problem is more taxes. I don't. I disagree. The problem is, for example, the top 1%. And they've been in the news. They always refer to the top 1%. They're rich. Well, they're paying nearly 40% of all personal income taxes. As far as I'm concerned, that's too much. They're overtaxed. And the bottom 50% pay less than 3%. The rich, the people that own businesses, create the wealth, hire people, create jobs, create incomes, are penalized for being successful. You see, the problem is government has gotten so big, so bloated, so obese that it's hurting the growth of this economy. And why that is absolutely crucial is that you're never going to get back to a full employment economy where less than 3% can't find a job. Remember, even though we've had some progress in the U3 unemployment rate falling down to, I think it's 5.1% now, what they never tell you is, although I do, is the labor participation rate. In other words, people that are actually either working or looking for work has fallen from where its normal range was, and it has changed over time, was between 66 and 67%. Now it's less than 63%. It's over a 30-year low. In other words, there's a lot of American people, and I think it's somewhere between 20 and 30 million, that really want a full-time job. Some of them have part-time jobs. Some have two part-time jobs. But some simply can't find work. And they're looking for a good-paying, permanent job. And they have skills. It's not like a teenager that has never worked before. That's a lot of people. And see, if they were working, what happens? And this is the key. If all those people were working, the government would be raking in a lot more taxes. See, if they're not participating because they can't find a job, or if they do find a job, or it's not a good paying job, what does that mean? The taxes are significantly below where they should be. And if they were to find a permanent job comparable to their skill sets, the government would be collecting a lot more money, and there would be a lot more money going in to pay for Social Security and Medicare that are running deficits. See, everything is connected. That's the problem I have with the news. They don't even attempt to connect the dots. They're afraid to connect the dots. I'm not afraid to connect the dots. If you truly want to grow this economy, where the United States historically has been growing about 3%, 3.1%. Today, it's lucky if it's at 2%. As a matter of fact, the second estimate of the first quarter GDP, real GDP numbers, comes out tomorrow. And I'm very interested in what that number is. I think it's going to be 1% or less. It could even be negative. I don't know. But my educated guess, it's probably, the advance estimate was 0.2%. So I think it's going to be somewhere between 0 and 1%. I could be surprised either way. I don't have a crystal ball, but the problem is, whatever that number is, it's going to be below 3%. And there's nothing magical or great about 3%. That's just the trend line for many decades. You see, to get back to full employment, what does the United States need to do? It needs to be growing. The economy needs to be growing at 4, 5, 6%. Not at 1%, not at 2%, really not even at 3%. Because if we're going to get the 20 to 30 million people that are either unemployed or underemployed back to work at good-paying jobs, the economy needs to be growing. Now, what's stopping that? It is the fact that the government spending is out of control. The central core economic problem today is government spending, and it's not just the United States. It's also Western Europe. It's bloated. And a lot of that money, for the United States, it falls into really three categories: defense, entitlement spending, and welfare. And if you add interest, you're over 70% of the money that the United States pays out. Those categories. And the two biggest ones, entitlements, are Social Security and Medicare. And what's driving that? It's simply demographics. The population of the United States is getting older. And as that happens, more and more people qualify for various social insurance programs, such as Social Security benefits, as well as Medicare benefits. And that's a lot of people. That's 75 million people. So to pay for that, what needs to happen? And get back to at least trend line, but really, as far as I'm concerned, if the government would get out of the way and we had some fundamental reforms in our tax system and had balanced or surplus budgets? Note, I didn't say deficits. Balance minimum. First step is just to balance the budget. And I think it would be hard, but it can be done in 2 years. Will it be done in 2 years? No. Neither party is serious about this. That's why I'm not a Democrat or Republican. They're both big government parties. The only thing they argue about is where to spend the money. Yesterday, I went into the fact that a lot of talk radio, not all of talk radio, but a lot of talk radio is what I call Republican radio. These are people that have worked in past administrations. Many of them are attorneys or were attorneys. They're Republicans. And now they're talk show hosts. And most of the people they have as guests on their show that they interview are either past congressmen, senators, governors, or people that worked in the government. And they are for bigger governments. Now, the difference between them and the Democrats is what they want to spend the money on. You see, both political parties are big-time interventionists in terms of the economy, domestically and abroad, intervening. The problem is the United States is broke. Let's cut to the chase. That's the problem. Now, don't panic. We can still, the government still knows how to pay its bills, but we're quickly going to a day of reckoning. The basket case today in Europe is Greece. You see, they didn't pay attention to this. They had a far leftist government, a socialist government, and now they're up against it. And it's the same thing with the Ukraine. And the Ukraine used to be the breadbasket for Europe. It's now broke. They're going hat in hand for money. And what is the European Union saying? We don't have any money. We gave it all to the Greeks. You see, that's the problem of the collectivists that promote what I call Santa Claus socialism. Vote for me and I'll give you a benefit. Vote for me, I'll give you another benefit. Vote for me, I'll make it even, I'll double your benefits. What's the problem with that? Well, one of the big problems is if your population is declining in size and your population is getting older and older, what do you have to do for the poor young people here? You got to tax them. And that's what that they think is the remedy. But what happens? What do you think the young people do that are smart? They leave that country. They know it's bankrupt. And I've heard economists, oh, we're not even close to where Greece is. And I agree with that. But there is a lesson there. Look at what's happening. You have riots, civil unrest in the streets. And they're going to default on their debt. And it's only going to get worse. The government can't pay the bills. And eventually, that's going to happen to the United States. Governments have, throughout history, including the United States, by the way, have gone bankrupt. This is not new. This is not different. The only thing that's different in terms of the United States is the sheer magnitude. Now, I've discussed deficits, and we've had huge ones. But as you accumulate the debt, what happens? Your national debt goes up. We're over $18 trillion today, and we're heading towards $20 trillion. I will say by 2020, at the latest, we'll be over $20 trillion. And it could be a lot earlier. And when I say that, I would say 2-3 years. Why? More and more people are retiring. The baby boom generation is retiring. And that means you're going to have to pay out a lot of benefits that you haven't funded. And see, this is the key point here. Yes, the national debt is going up. But that is literally just the tip of the iceberg. It's a major problem, folks. But it's just the tip of the iceberg. The iceberg, you see, just now I've been across the Atlantic and the Pacific on a ship. A lot of people have not had that experience, but I have not seen icebergs. But people have seen and taken pictures of iceberg. What you see at the top is just a small percentage of the iceberg. Well, that's the same situation. Think of the national debt is just what you see above water, and that's what gets a lot of attention, and that's what the press focuses on. Ooh, look at the national debt. What are they not talking about? I'm talking about it, but what are they not talking about? It's called unfunded liabilities. These are promises politicians, Democrats, and Republicans have made to the American people. If you vote for me, you will get more money when you retire for your Social Security benefits and more benefits in Medicare. And guess what? people fell for it. You see, I'm sort of blaming the politicians. No, folks, we elected these people. Now, some of you can rightly say, well, I wasn't born. Well, I wasn't born when FDR did this. But for most of that period, either I was growing up under 18 and not working, but once I hit 18, started to work, either part-time or full-time, as well as get an education. And you multiply that by tens of millions of people. And now, over the next 10 years, most of the baby boom generation will have retired. In other words, they have and many of them still work, and that's why I need to be careful. They qualify and will start receiving Social Security benefits as well as Medicare benefits. In other words, entitlement spending and the two major programs are Social Security and Medicare will increase as a percentage of the budget. That's one of the major drivers of government spending. And it's the most difficult one for either political party to discuss in terms of reforming. We need to reform it. The question is how you go about it. But the more important question is the sooner you do it, the better. Because it's only going to get worse. And neither political party has the will, the vision, the understanding, frankly, to do this. They're afraid of this. Because like Christie, you're going to get a reaction. There are many people that will say, he's trying to cut my Social Security. I'm not going to vote for him. And I'm not a, don't get me wrong here, I don't particularly care for the governor of New Jersey. He's not on my short list. And let me give you my, I've given it in the past, but I don't have a horse in this race. I'm not a Democrat or Republican. But because I have a talk show, I follow most of these candidates, and I've narrowed my, call it the acceptable candidates. Note, I'm not endorsing one any here, but it's Rand Paul, Senator from Kentucky, Ted Cruz, Senator from Texas, and two governors, Mike Pence from Indiana, and Walker from Wisconsin. Those are the four that I think will win one or more of the primaries and will make it to the stage when we have the debates. There at last, it looks like the Republicans are going to have more than a dozen candidates. But here's the problem. What does the Republican Party stand for? Every one of the reason I narrowed it down, there are a number of candidates that I won't vote for. Some even are impressive, but I won't vote for them. Why? They're big government conservatives. They want to intervene in this economy and abroad. You see, that is fundamentally the problem. The United States no longer can afford to be policemen of the world. I'd have never wanted them to be policemen of the world. No one really appointed us. But when you're broke and running these massive deficits every year, running up the debt and have this unfunded liability that's over $100 trillion, you have to get it through your head. The party's over, whether it's the Democratic Party or the Republican Party. And ladies and gentlemen, the American people are slowly but surely, unfortunately too slow, are picking up on this. The bottom line is, all of you that have your hand out, and let me qualify this, you put money in this. You agreed with the deal. Okay, you're taking money out of my paycheck for Social Security and Medicare and disability, and I understand that money is going to go to the people that are on it. But when I reach the age where I'm eligible for it, I expect to get the benefits that I'm entitled to. I agree with that. Now, if you talk to most young people, they don't think they're going to see a penny. And guess what? They're absolutely right. And see, that's the problem. That is the fundamental problem. You're going to have a revolt in this country because there will be Democrats. They won't get elected very much. That'll say, the answer is to increase the tax rates for Social Security and everything else. That's their answer. More and more and more entitlement welfare programs. And what the neocons, the neoconservative Republicans, as well as the interventionist Republicans, they want to be policemen of the world. They want to intervene in this country, that country, Ukraine, the Middle East, you name the country, we need to be police. We need to be there. Stop evil. That's nice. Many of them have never been in the military. That's what really gets me. When they had a chance to volunteer, they didn't. And today, less than 1% of the entire population of the United States has been in the military. But we want to send them to war. We want to be a policeman. And see, here's the problem. The American people are wising up to that. No, we don't. We don't want our sons and daughters dying. We don't want to pay for Iraqi military equipment and then they cut and run. We're learning, we're wising up. And see, that's the problem. And it gets back to out of control spending. And that's why you have millions of Americans every day leaving both political parties. When you only have two parties, either the Democrats win or the Republicans. What we need, and soon we'll have, I estimate sometime in the next 5 to 15 years, I don't have any crystal ball, but once independents are 50%, and they're about in their 40s now, it's gotten up to 47. But once that line is crossed, and over half of the voters don't like either party, what's going to happen? You're going to have competition. You're going to have a third party that's saying, we have to get our financial act in order, our house in order. That means we have to cut spending across the board. We have to eliminate entire departments of the government. Hey, are you hearing any politicians really saying that? No. And that's the problem. The Republican Party, I don't know what they stand for anymore. I used to vote Republican because the Democrats have gone to the far left. For all practical purposes, they're socialist, or social Democrats is what they call them in Europe. Their answer to everything is another government problem. They haven't woken up to the fact that you need a growing population if you're going to play this game of more and more benefits. Vote for me, Santa Claus socialism, and I'll give you more benefits. It doesn't work out when the number of workers to retirees is going down, down, and down. So a lot of people are abandoning both parties, and what they're looking for is really adult supervision. They're looking for a party that's principled, believes in the Constitution, runs candidates with integrity, and what I mean by that, for example, President Obama has an integrity problem. That's a nice way of saying the guy's a liar. Nobody trusts him. And Hillary Clinton is the leading candidate, and no one trusts her. They're habitual liars. Would you trust either one with your kids or your fortune? No. And all they want to do is increase the size. The answer to everything is another government program, more laws, more taxes. You see, the only way you're going to grow this economy is provide strong economic incentives for individuals, many of them rich, to form businesses. And that's where the jobs are created, by new small businesses, as well as those that are small and new but expanding. Those are where the jobs are. And you need to provide them strong economic incentives, and you need to reduce the uncertainty. And the big uncertainty today is whether or not the federal government, through its elective representatives in Congress, can get its act together. And the first step is just balancing the budget. The second is start to pay off the debt. And what you need to do is start closing down at least 8 to 10 federal departments and fundamentally reform the entitlement as well as welfare programs. And you need to change the tax system to encourage business formation and capital investment. In other words, go to a broad-based consumption tax, such as the fair tax, or what I have a version of that, what I call fair tax less. Now, why do you need to do that? Because the existing system is a burden. It discourages business formation and investment. You want to encourage it. And that's what a broad-based consumption tax would do, because there'd be no tax on either capital or labor. You'd be taxed when you spend it. Now, I'm looking at the clock. I got to shut the program down. But I wanted to do this part two because I really did not cover it. And I really could spend another 30 minutes, and maybe I will tomorrow. Thank you for listening, and now America the Beautiful. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.